Welcome to 2012 Journey to Evolution. I am your host, Tamboreen Borelli, and we are here tonight with the subject of the power of love. And it couldn't be a better night because I'm here with all my family flew in for my birthday today, and there's a house full of people here with dogs and a cat, and so there might be some background noise you might hear, but it's all in love, so it's all good. I want to give you the number to call in. Anyone that has any story about what love means to them and what it isn't, and any healing stories that they have about love, please feel free to call in at 888-815-9756. But first, I want to share with you, I got an email last week from my cousin. And it's one of those emails that after you read, you have to reach for a tissue because it has touched you somewhere so deep that you can't help but weep for at least a few minutes. And this one was very sweet. It was about, let me just read it. It says that a group of 4 to 8-year-olds were asked what love means to them. And I'm just going to read it to you how I got it. The first one says, when my grandmother got arthritis, she couldn't bend over and paint her toenails anymore. So my grandfather does it for her all the time, even when his hands got arthritis too. That's love. That's Rebecca, age 8. When someone loves you, the way they say your name is different. You just know that your name is safe in their mouth. That was Billy, age 4. Love is when a girl puts on perfume and a boy puts on shaving cologne and they go out and smell each other. That's Carl, age 5. Love is when you go out to eat and give somebody most of your French fries without making them give you any of theirs. That's Chrissy, age 6. Love is what makes you smile when you're tired. Terry, age 4. Love is when my mommy makes coffee for my daddy and she takes a sip before giving it to him to make sure the taste is okay. That's Danny, age 7. Love is when you kiss all the time. Then when you get tired of kissing, you still want to be together and you talk more. My mommy and daddy are like that. They look gross when they kiss. That's Emily, age 8. Love is what's in the room with you at Christmas if you stop opening presents and listen. That's Bobby, age 7. If you want to learn to love better, you should start with a friend who you hate. That's Mika, age 6. And there was a little caption that says, we need a few million more Nikas on the planet. I agree. Love is when you tell a guy you like his shirt. No. Love is when you tell a guy that you like his shirt and then he wears it every day. I knew someone that did that. That's Noelle, age 7. Love is like a little old woman and a little old man who are still friends even after they know each other so well. Tommy, age 6. During my piano recital, I was on stage and I was scared. I looked at all the people watching me and I saw my daddy waving and smiling. He was the only one doing that. I wasn't scared anymore. Cindy, age 8. My mommy loves me more than anybody. You don't see anyone else kissing me to sleep at night. Claire, age 6. Love is when mommy gives daddy the best piece of chicken. Elaine, age 5. Love is when mommy sees daddy smelly and sweaty and still says he is handsomer than Robert Redford. Chris, age 7. Love is when your puppy licks your face even after you left him alone all day. Mary Ann, age 4. I know my older sister loves me because she gives me all her old clothes and has to go out and buy new ones. Lauren, age 4. When you love somebody, your eyelashes go up and down and little stars come out of you. That's Karen, age 7. Love is when mommy sees daddy on the toilet and she doesn't think it's gross. Mark, age 6, from the mouth of babes. You really shouldn't say I love you unless you mean it. But if you mean it, like my dog means it, you should say it a lot. People forget. Jessica, age 8. And the final one says the winner was a 4-year-old child whose next-door neighbor was an elderly gentleman who had recently lost his wife. Upon seeing the man cry, the little boy went into the old gentleman's yard, climbed onto his lap, and just sat there. When his mother asked what he had said to the neighbor, the little boy said, "Nothing. I just helped him cry." And sounds like my dog wants to cry right now. But those were all very real and very just raw, innocent perspectives on love. And, you know, children, somehow they seem to have it like that because it's before the world has shaped and molded what its view of love is. You know, sometimes I think that we come in just this clean slate, fresh from the source of love. So I think they have it right. I think they have it the clearest. Before there is an opportunity for any other perspectives to take the purity of those explanations and make them into something that really isn't love. You know, I'm asking the question today, you know, what happens when you can't find it, when you can't find that place of that purity, that sense of innocent type love? You know, when you've just had a horrible day, you are just inundated with irritation, you know, things of life are just bombarding you from, it seems like, every direction. What do you do when you can't even get to the place where you want to even receive anything that resembles love? I don't know about anyone else, but I know that there are times when I feel that way. And ironically, I experienced that today. And I didn't know if it was something in the planets or what. And I even called my mother, "What is the full moon tonight? Because I feel like I'm going crazy." And of course, she readily gave me what was going on. But the thing was, is I actually got to experience the answer to my question, you know, because in the height of whatever I was feeling at the time, I didn't want any kind of love, you know, and I'm a pretty loving person. I'm pretty, you know, I love to love. That is one of my favorite things. But today I was in a state that just was other than myself. And I was talking to my sister about it, and she posed the question, "Well, what do you do in those times?" And I just felt like, well, sometimes it's just about allowing that feeling and not having to make it, you know, not having to do what we used to call, at the University of Santa Monica, we used to call it a spiritual bypass. You know, when you're feeling not so Sunshine and Roses, and somewhere within you judge that, like, oh, well, that's not, you know, that's not spiritual, or that's not loving. You know, I should be feeling loving right now. And they called that a spiritual bypass because you're really repressing what's true for you in that moment. And by repressing whatever your feeling is, it is not loving to your own self. By worrying about how anyone else is going to feel because of how you feel, it's really not honoring your own truth. So I believe that until we can honor ourselves in whatever that is true for us in that moment, we cannot give or receive love from anyone else until we do that with ourselves. And I know that that kind of sounds like a cliche, but when you experience it firsthand, it really rings true. It really just brings home what that statement is all about. Loving yourself. It is such a cliche. Do you love yourself? Oh, well, clearly they don't love themselves. You have to love yourself. And it's been said so many times in so many different arenas that it's almost lost its meaning. And tonight, I really got a clarity of it, you know, what it means to just allow yourself and be true to whatever it is that you're feeling. You know, when speaking of children and the purity, you know, kids just feel what they feel. It's not until an adult tells them that it's right or wrong. You know, it's like a feeling, it's the most naturalist thing. When you have a thought about it and you put, when your left brain assigns a judgment to it of this is right or this is wrong or this is appropriate or not appropriate, or I'm a good girl if I feel this way or think this, or a bad girl if I don't, then the feeling turns into an emotion. And based on the judgment and making it an emotion, we develop an emotional addiction to whatever that judgment is, say if it's guilt or unworthiness or whatever that is. You know, when we began to have that on a regular basis, you know, literally on a cellular level, we become addicted to those emotions. So it begins to be a cycle that is seemingly never ending until awareness comes into the situation. When we have awareness, like tonight, you know, being like, well, you know what, I'm really not feeling quite right, and then allowing myself to just not feel right. And ironically, it's my birthday today, so it was one of those strange kind of moments that, you know, it's your birthday, your whole family's here to celebrate you. One would think someone should be, you know, should is the operative word. You should be feeling all rosy. And I wasn't, for whatever reason. So it was brilliant for my sister to bring that up to me. And I appreciate it because it allowed me to just go through that and allow myself to feel it. And allowing myself to feel it was the most ultimate love I could have for myself without judging myself or, you know, not having the appropriate textbook emotion at that time. And then sure enough, minutes later, and after a few glasses of wine, my sister just hugged me. And a hug that I probably wouldn't have been open for a few minutes before, I allowed myself to receive the love that my sister was giving to me. And the part of myself that was in resistance to it, it wasn't strong enough at that point because I had just given my own self a dose of love. So by giving myself love, I was then open for someone else to give me some. And so my defenses were down and I allowed this beautiful hug that I could, it was a palpable surge that just oozed into my heart and it just went through all over my body and all was well. Again, it was a beautiful opportunity for me. It was a beautiful a beautiful lesson. So on that note, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in just a minute with the power of love. And again, anyone that wants to call in and give a little story about love from their experience, call in 888-815-9756. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back. We are here, 2012, Journey to Evolution, and with Chico, the watchdog. We're talking about love, and I think Dawn just now said it best. Hold on a moment, please. Hold, please. I have to muzzle this dog.
Oh, right. Okay.
Everyone calm down. Everything is all right. No one moves. Okay. Back to the subject matter. On the break, Dawn, I asked Dawn what love meant to him. And he said, love is the doorway to transcend this learning experience. And, I mean, God, that just hit it right on the head because, you know, all of us here, no matter what creed, race, you know, class, male, female, everyone has their own curriculum. You know, even myself, I've been almost everything that exists in the world. I was born and raised a Catholic. I was a Muslim at a time. I was a born-again Christian, dabbled in Wicca a little bit, a student of ancient knowledge. And the thing is now, having experienced firsthand all of those, I have a love and a compassion for any and everyone that still is within those avenues of learning. Because the end result, it's love. It really is. That's the one common thread that is in every religion and every ideology. Love, at the end of the day, even when you transcend a particular ideology, love is the most powerful thing that exists in all creation. It's the only thing that has the power to heal anything, any wound, anything. I've learned that firsthand also. So basically, I just want to get different perspectives because as many different people as there are, there's that many different perspectives in regard to love. It's the one word. There's other traditions that have so many different words for love. In the English language, it's a little limited because, you know, we use love for almost everything. It's like, I love you. I remember this one friend of mine was telling me that her boyfriend said that he loved her. She says, well, you know, you love me like you love your shoes, like you love your favorite drink, or, you know, because just one word is like, it's used for everything. So I've given you an example tonight in regard to self-love. I'm going to access some of the wisdom that's in the room tonight, and not from my dog Chico, obviously. I'm going to ask Catherine what she thinks about love, what love means to her. What does love mean to you, Catherine?
Well, it means a lot of things, but when I was contemplating this, what came up was, of all people, Michael Jackson. And throughout his life and throughout his years, I've enjoyed his music and I've listened to it off and on. I've never really, I don't have a television set, but I do follow the news through the internet. And so I've never really kept close track of his life, but I was aware of the goings on in his life, so to speak, kind of at a distance. So as he went through all his trials and tribulations, with his sexuality and his family and his children and all of that, I just kind of followed it at a distance. Can I sit down here? And then after he passed, after he left, I went to the movie theater and I watched his movie, This Is It. And I was absolutely stunned and taken by a different reality that I experienced in watching that movie. And in fact, I went back three times and watched that movie three times. And what I experienced was not a human being, not a man with the normal trials and tribulations of a human being, a male human being. I experienced a soul. Perhaps for me, a soul who had not been in the human body very often and didn't fit into it comfortably, know what to do with it. And beyond all of that, I experienced him holding a grander view of life. And I would sum that up as a grander view of what love is. And I do believe in my own experience of that, that he left this plane at exactly the right time to give us even more of that in the experience of what he left for us as a legacy. The world right now, in all of its crisis, its financial crisis, its war crisis, its environmental crisis, its relationship crisis, what he left in terms of that movie, This Is It, I do believe more people went to see it and experience it because of his death than would have had he just sold all of those concert tickets and performed. And so what I'd like to do is just read the words from a song that he wrote a long time ago when Africa was in trouble. It's still in trouble, but back then he wrote a song called what is the name of this song? Jesse, what's the name of the song?
We Are the World.
We Are the World. Thanks. I wrote down the lyrics and I didn't even put the title down. So, and now this song was revived and used in the Aid to Haiti collaboration that came from all those wonderful public figures, singers, and entertainers. So I want to just read those words for you, not all of them, from Michael Jackson. There comes a time when we hear a certain call, when the world must come together as one, where people are dying and it is time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all. We can't go on pretending day by day that someone somewhere will soon make a change. We are all a part of God's great big family, and the truth, you know, love is all we need. We are the world. We are the children. We are the ones who make a brighter day. So let's all start giving. There's a choice we're making. We're saving our own lives. It's true, we'll make a better day, just you and me. And so, yes, you have to love yourself first. Those aren't his words. Those are my words. Yes, you have to love yourself first, but the gift of love is life in all its many, many formats. And when we all know that and we all come together for all of life, the earth, the animals, the water, the trees, the sky, every living being, no matter what shape it takes, then we unite together in that oneness. And that's just been a very potent meaning for love for me recently. And I thank Michael Jackson for his beautiful life and his children who are carrying that on and all the performers who have performed his music and keep it going for all of us.
Yeah, something you just said made me think of just how that relates, like say for instance the name of this show, 2012, Journey to Evolution. Like, well, what does the power of love have to do with 2012 and evolving? And something you just said kind of brought it together for me in the sense of when we can look at any animal or any other person or, you know, any form of life, whether it be animal, vegetable, or mineral, and feel a connectedness to it, that anything we do to anything or anyone we really are doing to ourselves, that is the utmost love, because that is oneness. When you really get it, that we really are all connected, that a whole civilization couldn't help but to evolve into the future in a higher way of being. You know, and the way I see the future, I mean, it's happening now, but as we approach 2012 and then into 2013 and 14 and so on, I see it as us living in an evolved society, a civilized society where we don't have a choice in terms of, you know, having to specifically buy organic or meat that hasn't been, you know, tainted with poison and hormones and, you know, coming from farms where they have no respect for life and all that way of being. I see all of that not being a part of this new era that we're shifting into, because of course, why would you mistreat an animal that is here giving its life so that we could better ours? Why would you mistreat the ocean and put poison in it knowing that it will grossly affect the quality of life of whatever life that's in the ocean? You wouldn't do it because you'd be connected to it. So it would be idiotic to do that. And when someone makes choices like that in the way of life, that is evidence of an evolved being. And I see that that is where we're going. Excuse me. But 2012 and all of the different views of, you know, what's going to happen and, you know, wars and you know, all disasters and things like that, I really do think that when we tune into the frequency of love, so many questions will be answered, because when you choose love over fear, you automatically choose a frequency. And for those of you who aren't familiar with that term frequency, it's like a radio station. You choose a radio station that you only hear music that vibrates in love. If you choose a radio station that all they play is fear, all you can hear is fear. You know, I have to say that today I got a call from a friend who the last four times I spoke with him, he was all about fear in regard to 2012. You know, we have to dig a hole. We have to, you know, dig a hole. I mean, you know, for an underground safety place and store food and, you know, the world, you know, the sky is going to fall kind of thing. Every time I spoke to him in the past, say, 3 months, that's all he would be talking about. And I kept telling him, look, you know, that exists. That exists. I'm highly into quantum physics. I'm highly into the observer creating reality. And in regard to you choosing which version of reality that you experience, it's not airy fairy. It's not pie in the sky. It's hardcore science. It's quantum physics. Check out your quantum physics. Check out the electron circling the nucleus of the atom and it holding every possible position that exists. So back to my friend, he called me today and he says, you're never going to guess where I am right now. And he sounded very distressed. He was in Chile, of all places. He's not from there, doesn't know anyone there, but just happened to be in the place where they had the worst earthquake on record. He's a musician, and he was there doing a gig, of all places. I mean, you know, it's just the kind of thing that it just doesn't happen that way, unless that's what you're focusing on. Now, I'm not there, you know. I didn't experience that. I don't ever have thoughts in regard to death and destruction and doom and gloom in regard to 2012. It's not even in my consciousness. And I believe that is why I don't experience the shifts that are going on. Yes, there's shifts going on. Earth's body is shifting. There are earthquakes. There are tsunamis. There are things that are going on. But the bottom line is, do I choose that to be my experience? And the answer is no. And it probably wasn't the appropriate time to say this to him because he was in the midst of chaos. But, you know, what you focus on is what you get. And love, the frequency of love, is more powerful than fear.
you know? It just is. It's like there is no source of darkness. There is only light. If you light the smallest match in a dark room, it will transmute the darkness into light. So I say that to say love, you know, well-being, knowing that all is well, and just holding in the forefront of your mind and... Hi, I'm doing a radio show right now. Can I call you back, please? That was pretty funny. You know, in science, it's called the frontal lobe. That is where we create from. And what pictures you hold in your frontal lobe is where you create from. So if you are in fear, without a doubt, you will create circumstances that will oblige what you are focusing on. If you focus on love, that is what you will experience. On the note of perspectives of love, I am going to ask my nephew, who is here. He flew in to celebrate his auntie's birthday. How old are you, Antonio?
11.
He's 11 years old. So precious, and I really want to know what love means to you.
I think when love is when you know that someone cares about you.
Yeah.
And you care about them, and it's not really like, it's not like, you know, like, it's not, like, what they have, or it's not what they possess, it's what you like about them.
What were you saying earlier when you were talking about, you said connectedness?
Yeah.
That was pretty deep.
I guess so.
So what does that mean to you? Like, what would be an example of, like, how have you experienced connectedness with someone? Like, say for instance,
I guess being with them for a long time.
Being with them. Like, you have a great relationship with your dad. That's like a connectedness, right? Like,
you can trust him.
Yeah.
And he can trust me.
Yeah. You have friends like that you share that with?
Yeah.
People that, you know, would be there for you and you're there for them. And, yeah. Do you love differently, like, with different people, or is... Are there different ways that you think of it? Remember, like, how I was saying how, like, love, there's this one English word for love, but, like, say you love your favorite food a certain way, and then you love your mom and dad a certain way.
You can love food in a different way, and you can love creatures a different way. Like, my dog, you can love him a way, and then, like, sometimes you like a food, but you don't want to eat it right now.
Yeah.
And then... the same with dogs. You can't choose if you want to be with them right now.
Right.
Because he's there and you gotta be with him.
Don't you experience dogs to like always just unconditionally just love?
Yeah, same thing.
Right? Always, no matter what, huh?
Yeah.
I remember, who said the story about your dog, Hero in Romeo?
Yeah.
I think it was, because Hero's really old, right? And Romeo's young.
Yeah, he's a baby.
And so now Hero can't barely even function anymore, right?
Right.
And so your mom was saying that Hero's laying on the floor and Romeo, the puppy.
Romeo, we had another dog, which didn't work out.
Yeah.
So it was younger, like Romeo. So they were playing and jumping around and doing stuff like that. And so she had to leave, and then Hero got ripped up by her, and that's why she had to leave. So he didn't have anyone to play with, so he goes to Hero, and he's all old, and he can't really, doesn't want to play.
You're talking about the younger puppy.
Right, yeah, she's doing brown dog.
Right. Your mom was saying that tonight Hero was laying on the floor and couldn't really move, and Romeo just came and laid by him and just cuddled with him. Sweet, right? Yeah. Love.
Yeah, that's
what it is. Any last words on love? Thank you. From the mouths of babes. We're going to take another break, and we'll be back to close the show in just a minute. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.
Wanna know, won't you take me there? I wanna go far down the rabbit hole. Won't you take me there? Take me back to a place. It's where I never die, and never cry. And never again ask you why. There's diamonds sprinkled in the sky. To the land, and you open your eyes. I wanna know, won't you take me there? I wanna be. Won't you take me there? Take me back to the place where I never die.
I will never die.
And never cry.
And we're back, 2012, Journey to Evolution. Tonight we're talking about the power of love. And I basically want to tell a really sweet story that has to do with, you know, the people in our lives that push our buttons the most. You know, the ones that it seems to be the hardest to love. I can't remember where I read this, but it's so sweet, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but you'll totally get it. So up in the plane of bliss, before a soul came down here, it said, you know, I have still victimization to own. how am I going to own victimization when all I am surrounded by are beings of love and light? And this soul was really perplexed because they really wanted to own this last fig leaf to their soul's ultimate evolution. And one being of light stood up and came forth and said, I will do it for you. I will meet you down there. And I will be the source of your tyranny. I will victimize you to give you countless opportunity to own and resolve and become complete with your victimization, that your soul may be complete with that unresolved issue. And the other soul said, you would do that for me? And they said, yes, I love you that much that I will do that for you, except I just want to ask you to remember that it's me. When we are in the height of our dance, of our play. And so when I had that perspective, there wasn't really anyone I could look at. Even the people, I mean, that I just was like, there's no way. But something happened, something shifted in me with that story, because there was some truth to that story. It just resonated true to me that, you know what? We are all here on this stage playing our parts, playing our characters. At the end of the day, the curtain closes and we all go have a beer together. People that, you know, we've been arch enemies with, people that have killed us, we've killed them, we've done heinous things to them, they've done heinous things to us, all in the name of learning. The soul can never be hurt and never die. It's all about owning what we need to own and becoming complete and loving ourselves through it and not judging ourselves. Because the only people that we judge outside of us are the people that are mirroring back to us what we still hate about ourselves. So it truly is, it meaning evolution, it truly is all about love. And the mere spelling of the word proves what I'm saying. The first four letters of the word evolution is none other than L-O-V-E, love. Then there's a U, and then there's a T-I-O-N. The first four letters, love, then U, and then T-I-O-N denotes action. When you're in the action of loving yourself, the byproduct is evolution. And I wholeheartedly believe that. I have experienced it, so I know its truth within my own soul. And until you experience it yourself, it's only philosophy. But love always has been, it is now, and it will always be the most powerful thing in existence. Love knows where to find itself. And it's right as close as your own heart. So in closing, I just want to say that I would love to thank everybody that's here with me in the background, my family that has flown in to celebrate my birthday. That's love. The most beautiful souls I could have ever picked to come into this life. And my friends that are here, I'm truly blessed. I am surrounded by love, and love surrounds me. And I'm very blessed, very grateful. And along with all my animals that are here that you have gotten to know up close and personal, I'm very grateful for all of it. And I'm so grateful to be able to share it with you. So I bid you adieu for tonight, and we will see you next week. We're going to be talking about ancient sites with Donna Spratt. So come join us next week, Saturday at 10 o'clock, Station 1. We'll see you there. Have a great night.